Welcome to the Better and Longer podcast. I'm Justin Moore, President and CEO of the Area Office on Aging. Today, we are honored to have with us Mark Middleton from Growing Boulder. Mark is an innovator, a thought leader in this space, and certainly an inspiration, and holds out those that are doing amazing things at age 60 and better. So, Mark, thank you for coming to the podcast.
Justin, thanks for having me. I'm excited.
So, Mark, for those that might not be familiar with Growing Boulder, can you just give kind of a quick overview for our listeners?
Yeah, Growing Boulder is it's a media company, for lack of a better word. We are kind of a for-profit that doesn't make much money because we're mission-driven. We're a media company that produces television, radio, we've published a magazine. But Growing Boulder is just basically all about looking at aging through a prism of opportunity and possibility instead of loss and limitation. And, you know, we've been doing this for almost 20 years, really one of the first out there that, you know, we don't deny the reality of our mortality. Bad things happen to good people. Aging has many, many challenges, as does every life stage. But, you know, it's really, unfortunately, a bit of a contrarian view these days because, as you know, the culture of aging in this country in general makes people resent growing older when we believe that we should be celebrating. We believe that an extra day, an extra year, an extra decade is a blessing. And so that's kind of what we do, is tell stories of ordinary people who have figured out a way to enjoy their life, no matter their challenges. People who have been able to extract moments of joy out of their daily life, no matter how old they are, no matter what their challenges are.
So you and I both are fortunate to have a common connection with Ken Dykewald. For those listeners that might not be familiar with Ken, amazing author, inspirational speaker, and the like in the field of aging. And when Ken asked me who is doing amazing work in this space that we're in, focusing on individuals that are age 60 and better, you're the first person that came out of my mouth. And I'm honored that and grateful for Ken connecting the two of us. Talk a little bit about how you got into the work that you're doing now.
I was a local television sportscaster and newscaster. I worked in Phoenix and then Orlando, was the sports director and the 6 and 11 o'clock anchor for sports. And then I switched to news and anchored the sunrise, the early morning news, and the noon news until 2006. I got a little bit disappointed, frustrated with when local news became basically a nightly crime report. You know, the business model changed. I got into it because I love to tell stories. I believe that news is every bit as much about what happens in a community that's good as what happens that's bad. But, you know, all of a sudden there was cable news everywhere. There were news outlets everywhere, a proliferation of people reporting news. And, you know, it was used to be back in the day when there were just three local news stations, it was a license to print money. And all of a sudden, the business model changed. People started letting off staff. No longer were we able to do investigative reports. We didn't do, you know, enterprise reporting. I just feared that I would end up one day on the end of a microphone, standing in front of 7-Eleven, reporting on the drug deal that went bad that night, or the mobile home fire, or the tragic traffic accident. You know, we all see it. And I had two young kids at home, and I went from a stage of being proud of what I did to I wouldn't allow my kids to watch their dad anchor the evening news. And so I wanted to leverage the skills that I had. And it all happened, Justin, when the station shared market research with me, because I was one of the main anchors, and I looked at the market research, and they had done surveys, and the surveys were, what's your name, what's your age? And if the age was over 55, they discontinued the survey altogether. And I said, wait a second, why did you stop the survey here? And they said, well, they're over 55. And I said, but the average age of our viewer is 58, which is pretty much what it is nationwide. So you're telling me you don't care about our average viewer? And they said, no, we do, but advertisers don't. There's no benefit in creating content or really understanding the opinion of older adults. That sent me on a year-long, I became an amateur demographer. I read Ken Dykewald's book back in the day, and you know, I just became fascinated with the age wave, which was the name of Ken's, you know, first big book. And I wasn't fascinated so much with the numbers of of baby boomers, and I wasn't fascinated with the fact that they controlled more money than any older demographic in history. I was fascinated with the idea that older adults would live differently than any older adults in the history of humankind. And I thought it was just a fertile ground for telling stories that would be inspirational. And in good part, it was selfish because I just don't want to and never have wanted to buy into the ageist messaging that is so prevalent in our culture everywhere that wants us to hate ourselves. I mean, it literally does. There are thousands of companies making hundreds of millions of dollars by trying to lower our self-esteem, making me I cannot tell you, Justin, working in Phoenix and Orlando, how many people have come to me that have hair transplants, hair products, medication for, you know, I'm bald. And they couldn't believe that. And they said, no, Mark, we're not going to make you pay for this. You know, we're going to give you this service. We're going to give you the treatment. We're going to give you all of this stuff. And I said, no, I'm not going to worry about it. I don't care. But that's what our culture does. It makes us resent every wrinkle, every hair that we lose, every pound that we gain. And pretty soon, you know, we're just unhappy. And I didn't like that, so I thought I quit. I just walked in one day and quit, and with the intention of starting Growing Bolder, it took me 2 years to put together enough money to start hiring people. And they say now that I'm the only guy that ever escaped who came back over the wall and took others with him, because I went back and I hired the two best producers I ever worked with, the best videographer I ever worked with, and all three of them are still part of our team.
Yeah, your content is inspirational. It is very well produced, and I think it's very engaging. Talk a little bit about, you know, when you're talking about people's stories, talk about kind of your early formative days and somebody that maybe was inspirational to you that was age 60 and better.
You know, one of the greatest blessings I had was I worked in Phoenix. I replaced a guy by the name of Mike Leonard, who is still a very good friend of mine. Mike was a sportscaster in Phoenix. I was a swimming coach in Phoenix, and I used to watch the evening news. And Leonard, this is back in the 70s, so bizarre, so off the wall. He was fearless. And I, you know, this is pre-internet. I called the station one day, just said, would you give Mike Leonard a message for me? And next thing I knew, he was on the phone. And I said, Mike, you don't know me. I'm just calling to say that I admire what you do. I think it's fearless. I think it's incredibly creative. He invited me down there, and one thing, it's why I got into television, and when he left, I was hired to replace him. First job in television, which was really kind of remarkable, and the news director called me in. Now, I'm a sportscaster. News director called me in and said, Mark, your job is not to appeal to the sports fan. 85% of our audience are not sports fans. Your job is to appeal to Mrs. Jones. Mrs. Jones is 45 years old. She's got two kids, and she does not care about sports at all. She's going to get up and go to the kitchen when sports comes in. Your job is to keep her watching television. If I don't get 10 calls a month complaining about you, you're not doing your job. If I get 10,000, you're out of here. But, you know, you have got to figure out a way. So I learned how to tell stories. I never did a story on the star quarterback. I did a story on the star quarterback's mother. I never did a story on a big softball tournament on the undefeated team. I found the team that had never won a game and did a story from their point of view. So it was always a way of trying to tell a story that appealed to everybody. And that's what we do at Growing Bolder. We tell stories on older adults, tell stories on 100-year-olds. We're not telling these stories for other 100-year-olds. If they see it and they're motivated by it, I'm thrilled, and I love that. But we hear all the time from 20 and 30-year-olds that say, I miss church because I was listening to your radio show in the parking lot. I'm a 25-year-old college student. And so we just learned how to tell stories of ordinary people. We call them OPALs, ordinary people living extraordinary lives. And I know you and I do this. Ken Dykewall does it. Everybody quotes statistics. I do it all the time. I share the opinion of experts. I will quote. I do it all the time. But it doesn't change anybody's life. What we have learned at Growing Bolder is the only thing that really flips the switch, the only thing that truly affects personal transformation is when we can see ourselves in others. And I mean that literally. I wish we could tell stories of 85-year-old African-American men, 55-year-old obese women, someone who's overcome a particular type of cardiac disease. It's when you can see yourself, when you can see somebody doing something that you didn't think you could do, you never imagined you could do, or they're doing it in a way that you never thought about, that's when it's game on. So we call it the someone like me effect, when we can see ourselves in others. So that's really what we have tried to do, is tell really good stories in a way that even if you haven't had open heart surgery, even if you aren't obese, even if you're not 95, even if you're not an athlete, even if you're not whatever, it's still a good story, and there's still an element in there that will inspire you to figure out how you can extract joy out of your life.
What's an opal or a story that's really changed your life? Can you share with our listeners?
Well, you know, I'm going to share this video when you know, we chat at your big deal tomorrow. But I still talk about Julia Hawkins. Julia Hawkins was a cyclist. She competed a lot. She was never any good, but she stopped, I think, when she was in her 80s. And she didn't do anything, never ran. But when she turned 100, she became fascinated with the idea of running the 100 meters at 100 years old. And so she did that. And she set a world record for the fastest woman in the 100 to 104-year-old age group. And I made friends with her at the National Senior Games in 2019 in Albuquerque, and we stayed in touch. And I heard that she was going to, at 105 years old, become the first human being to run in a sanctioned track and field event in the 105 to 109-year-old age group. So I grabbed a camera, a little camera, flew by myself to Louisiana, to the Louisiana State Games, went to her home, hung out with her in her home where she lived alone, walked in her backyard where she grew bonsai trees and had a, everything in her yard was an indigenous plant species from Louisiana. Just a fascinating woman. And then we went to the track meet the next day, and I shot this videotape, and I shared it with the National Senior Games. I loved it because we put a Growing Bolder logo on it. And we made it free and available to anybody, and everybody in the world picked it up. Had a 586 million impressions, almost a billion impressions. And, you know, we made no money on it because we didn't monetize it in any way. But her whole deal is, I asked her, why do you do it? Aren't you afraid? Because she had cardiac issues. And she said, yes, I'm afraid. I take care of some personal business every time before I go to a meet like this because you just don't know what's going to happen. It's hard to even stand still at 105 years old. She couldn't see 3 feet in front of her. And she said, but when you get to be old, yes, you're afraid, but you have to look fear in the face and you have to run. And not literally, but you have to lean into life. You know, it's the dignity of risk. It's doing things that you'll want to do even though people are telling you shouldn't do it. And she said, I'm doing this for no other reason than to inspire people. If I can inspire other older adults to know that more is possible, if that's what the good Lord is keeping me alive to do, then I'm going to keep doing it. And she died this past year at 108. Never ran again. It was the last video ever taken of her. One day, Banana George called me up. Banana George was the world's oldest barefoot water skier. He lived in Winter Haven, Florida. And I knew he had been bedridden for 6 months. He was 93 years old. Every time he barefoot water ski was a new world record. Guinness Book of World Records. He was a wild man. He called me up and said, Mark, I'm going to go barefoot water skiing tomorrow. Everybody tells me not to do it. I shouldn't do it. My wife says I can't do it. My doctor says I can't do it. But, you know, the heck with them. I'm going to do it. If you want to videotape it, show up. So I did. Grabbed the camera, went to Winter Haven. Last videotape of Banana George ever water skiing, 93 years old. It's great video. I may play it tomorrow. And he gets out there and he tumbles head over heels, 93 years old. And I play this video at caregiving conferences. And, you know, everybody's just kind of like in awe of it. And all these caregivers are out there. And I say, now, if George had died that day, if he had died that day after his doctor said don't do it, after his wife said don't do it, after his kids said don't do it, but he got a friend who helped him do it because he wanted to do it. If he had died that day, would that have been a bad thing? And every head in the room starts shaking their heads. No. Now, these are caregivers. You know, this was a guy. You know, we used to pin people to their beds back in the day, strap people, you know, put people in wheelchairs when maybe they should still be walking. Older people need to have autonomy. You know, they need to be able to make decisions for themselves. And sometimes it's a decision that other people don't think that they should. And I'll just give you one more because I could go on and on. I default by nature, and I always have to feel like I've got to offer a disclaimer. I'm not trying to make anybody an athlete. I'm not trying to turn anybody into to compete in the National Senior Games. It's just like shooting fish in a barrel for us, though, because it's just older adults many of them never did anything until they were 60 or 70 or 80. I spoke at a caregiving conference one day. I was talking about the someone like me effect, and a woman came up to me afterwards and she said, I'm a caregiver, professional caregiver. I also cared for my mother, the most vibrant 93-year-old who ever lived. If I could have shown her someone like her, she'd still be alive. And I said, what do you mean? And she said she fell and broke her hip and she immediately lost her zest for life. And I said to her, what's wrong with you, Mom? Why are you like this? And she said, honey, nobody ever comes back from a broken hip at my age. And the woman said to me, if I could have shown her someone who did, I think she'd still be alive. Well, lo and behold, 6 months later, at the National Senior Games, I'm asking people, do you know anybody? And someone said, go talk to Dot over here. So Dot is 93 years old. She fell out of bed at 92, shattered her hip. Doctors told her family, don't expect her to survive surgery because she probably won't. When she did, physical therapist said, do not encourage her to walk because it will end badly. She's in a wheelchair now. 18 months later, she's running in the National Senior Games because they ignored all of that. She wanted to run, and she was able to. She didn't run fast. She didn't look like Usain Bolt, but she got up there and she ran 100 meters at 95 years old, 18 months after shattering her hip. So ordinary people doing extraordinary things that nobody's ever heard of, and most media has no interest in telling their stories except for us.
Do you have a goal on how long you'd like to live?
You know what? It's a great question, and I ask that in a lot of the talks. Do you want to live to be 100? And it's interesting to see the hands that come up. Here's what personally I want to do. I want to live as hard as I can, as engaged as I can, having as much fun as I can, taking the risks that I want to take for as long as I can. No matter what I get, I will fight it as hard as I can until I surrender. If you don't get hit by a bus, if you're not fortunate, at some point I think that you surrender, and I think that's a beautiful thing. At some point you realize, well, this is something I'm not going to come back from. I've talked to hospice people, and Justin, you know more about this than I do, but you know, people in hospice will describe a good death, and I say, wait a second, what's a good death? Say a good death is someone who has accepted the fact, and it is interesting when you do. You know, when they accept it, you know, something almost beautifully happens. You know, they become curious about it. They become okay with it. And a good death, they're in a place where they're comfortable. They're surrounded by family and friends. There are tears, but it's tears of joy of the time that they've spent together. And you know, so do I want to live to be 100? I want to live to be 100 if I can still get around, if I still have my wits about me, if I, you know, still can laugh, if I still can have fun. But health span is what it's all about. You know, we live in this culture that is obsessed with longevity. And I think that, here's what I think. I don't think there's ever going to be anything. No medicine, no genetic therapies, no novel cocktails. There is nothing that is going to give you vitality. There's nothing that is going to give you quality of life without your own participation. period. I could be wrong, but I just don't think there's ever a pill that's going to do that. I think that much like the space program of the 60s, you know, gave us Tang, eventually there will be things that will filter down from all of this obsession with immortality that will benefit the normal man, but it's not going to happen soon enough to benefit, you know, certainly me. And so, yeah, I'm not trying to live to be 100. I'm just trying to make the most out of every day for as many days as I can.
One of the things that came to mind as you're talking is my grandpa, and he had dementia and was living in an assisted living facility, and along with my grandma, who also had dementia. And I went to visit them one day, and they were sitting in a group watching a show on TV in kind of the living room area or common area. And my grandma was sitting in a chair, and my grandpa is laying, sleeping on the couch next to her. And I sat down and was talking to my grandma for maybe 5-10 minutes. My grandpa's always a witty guy and the like. He was pretty advanced with his dementia at this point in time. And eventually he started to stir and came to, and my grandma, she said, Larry, Justin's here. And my grandpa just sat up and said, so what does he want, a ribbon? And what struck me at that moment was that while my grandpa probably had lost his ability to make a memory for himself, he had not lost his ability to make a memory for me. And I think sometimes we lose out on that in society when talking about, you know, what we want in terms of our longevity to be and the like, is even in situations that, and with conditions and diagnoses that most people would think, you know, just I want to throw in the towel, I want to be done or whatever. I think sometimes we lose out on how the way that we live in that moment and seize that day with whatever hardships we're dealing with can impact the lives of others and make a lasting impression in their lives.
Totally agree. Yeah, it's and that's the thing that you learn when you spend any time at all with people, even in advanced stages of dementia, they still have the ability themselves to live in the moment. And isn't that what we're all trying to do? That maybe is all they can do, but that's what we're all trying to do. And, you know, that's become one of my main talking points as I talk about aging, is because you lose all credibility if you pretend that it's just a fun and happy ride. I mean, aging, I experience new things every year as I get older. That you start to understand pain. You start to understand the frustration. You start to understand the aches. You start to understand, you know, lack of so many different things. But we've probably done more interviews with active centenarians than any media company in the world. Video interviews. You know, the New England Centenarian Group has done, you know, probably hundreds, if not thousands, of regular interviews. But yeah, if we read about anybody that's over 100 that is active and engaged, we run them down and we get them on our radio show. We get them on our podcast. And if they're nearby, we get a video in front of them. And there are common threads among people who are over 100 and enjoying life. And there are things that anybody can aspire to and that anybody can achieve if they want to, if they're able to overcome the whole woe is me, I'm getting old stuff.
If there's a listener here that's really focused on longevity or wanting to live a life in a certain way, a certain age in the future, and it's a vibrant, active life, let's say at age 80, what words of wisdom have you kind of garnered from the many stories that you've covered and individuals that you've interviewed? You know, what are some tips that you'd give to individuals on what they should be doing? I'm 46 years old, so what should I be doing as a 46-year-old to get there?
Well, you know, everybody talks about active aging. You know, the International Council for Active Aging has their Active Aging Week. And, you know, active aging is far more than just physical activity. It's emotional activity and social activity. And and as I'm sure you know, because everybody quotes it, one of these statistics, but the Harvard study of adult development, it's interesting. One of the longest longitudinal studies underway started back in 1938, and you know it gives them this vision. They do surveys every couple of years, and you know so they can look back and they can see the people at 80 the people at 80 who are the healthiest are those who had the strongest social relationships at 50. And so the directors of this study, PhDs and MDs, say the key to happy, healthy aging is social relationships, is relationships. So I would say to younger people, in the 40s and 50s especially, cultivate social connection, cultivate relationships, and prehabilitate. I love to talk about everybody knows what rehabilitation is. Prehabilitation to me is aging's ultimate no-brainer. It is preparing, Justin, for the physical challenges that you will have as you age. It's part of the human condition. We will all experience a series of physical setbacks, and to a very large extent, the types of interventions that are made available to us, the extent of our recovery after those interventions and the speed of our recovery is largely determined and dependent upon our overall health and well-being at the time. And so you should now be preparing for that. Here's the cool thing about fitness. You can bank fitness. You can bank strength. I don't want to get too deep into this, but muscle cells are unique in the body in that they are multinucleated. The only cells in the body that have more than one nucleus. And if you exercise and work out and stop, your muscles will atrophy, but these nuclei never go away. They stay there. And so even 10, 20, 30, 40 years later, you start to work out again, you have almost an immediate response. So even if you don't stick with it. If you exercise for 10 years now, it is going to pay incredible benefits. If you stop for 20 or 30 years, it's going to pay incredible benefits when you're 80 or 90 years old. So socialize and move. You know, it's this is the thing that, you know, people have don't like to talk about. There's you have to lift weights. You really do. I mean, they do studies with people in 80s and 90s that have never done anything, and they're not over-exercising. They're doing it with their doctor's permission. But you have to move your body. You have to lift some weights, and you just have to stay active and watch your diet. That's about all you can do. And the sooner that's the thing. It's never too late to start, and the sooner you start, the better.
That's right. What are your thoughts on nutrition, right? That's a pretty broad category. Sometimes people are not sure what they're supposed to consume, what they're not supposed to consume. We all hear those examples of people that live to be 100, 105 and have what doctors might characterize as a bad habit with what they consume and the like. Have you noticed with the different stories and with your own personal life, things that are some pretty tried and true kind of tips on what to consume, how to consume it?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, here's the problem with everything, especially with the internet these days. You can find information that will support whatever belief you want to have. If you want to believe that drinking Coke and eating bacon is healthy for you, you will find someone that is saying that on the internet, more than likely funded by Coca-Cola and the American Bacon Society, if there is such a thing. And then you do interview these centenarians. The longest living human in history, documented lifespan, is Jean Calme, a French woman who lived to be 122 years, 164 days. No one's come close. I think she died in 1998. She had a glass of wine every night. She ate 2.5 pounds of chocolate a week, and until she was 117, she smoked a single cigarette every day. And she later said, the only reason I quit smoking that single cigarette is that my hands were so arthritic, I was afraid I would drop the cigarette and light my house on fire. Not encouragement to do any of those things. They're all bad for you, but she had good genetics and her lifestyle. She had what the French call the joie de vivre. She had a joy of life. She took up fencing in her late 80s. She rode her bike daily until she was 102. She lived alone until she was 110. So diet is important. And you will read that I read 5, 6 years ago, the oldest woman in America, her secret to longevity was Texas Pete hot sauce. You know, it's just crazy. But to get down to it, our microbiome is critically important. You know, our gut is critically important. And we put so much ultra-processed food into our body that it is killing us. You know, we have to get away from eating ultra-processed food. I mean, that's the deal. The U.S. is number one in the world in healthcare expenditures. We are number 47 in the world in life expectancy at birth, and we're 68th in the world in health span. I mean, we are totally blowing it, and a good bit of it is due to what we eat and what we consume. And there's been a lot of stuff that's come out lately that said alcohol is, you know, don't fool yourself. I used to love a good glass of red wine, and on occasion I will still drink it, but I've heard so much about alcohol, I just rarely drink anything anymore. I've cut almost sugar out of my diet altogether because sugar creates a whole lot of inflammation. I haven't had a piece of red meat since 1975. I've personally put a dent in the chicken population, though. I probably eat too much chicken and fish. But, you know, you don't have to be a fanatic because there are examples of people who, I mean, good Lord, I ran into a guy at a swim meet who is on the carnivore diet. That's all he eats is meat, 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 meat. And he says he feels better than he ever did. In general, most people, by and large, will tell you you need to gravitate toward a plant-based diet. You have to cut back red meat. You can't eat processed meat. You should not smoke, and you shouldn't drink any alcohol. And above and beyond that, you know, do your thing.
When it comes to motivation, right, sometimes people might in their head know what they're supposed to eat, know what they're supposed to do, exercise and the like, but sometimes motivation is the limiting factor or keeping them from doing all those things that they know they should do. Talk about a movie that motivates you or inspires you that maybe our listeners should check out if they haven't already done so.
Wow. Man, I didn't see that question coming. I'm going to have to think about that, Justin. I don't know a movie, a particular movie. Do you have one?
So I think that there's I'm drawing a blank on the name right now, but there's a movie about a group of singers, like a choral group, and that's later in life and touring around and having all kinds of fanfare and the like. That's one that comes to mind as being inspirational for what people can do later in life.
Is it a documentary?
It is.
Yeah. I have very eclectic taste in film. I can't recommend anything, but I will think about that.
Okay.
And I'll email it to you.
All right. What about music? What's a music that motivates you, or a band, a group?
You know, I have very eclectic taste in music as well. I'd love to listen to pop music. You know, I grew up in the 60s and 70s, so, you know, classic rock I enjoy listening to. But I can enjoy just about any kind of music, and I find myself, you know, I like rap. Yeah, I like it all.
What about who's on the top of your person to interview list?
Who would I like to interview?
Mm-hmm.
Wow, that's a really good question. You know, having worked in, I honestly forget. We've done, I think, 4,000 interviews for our radio show.
Wow.
We've done, I think we're on 480 radio show. And when we did it originally, it was 5, 6, 7 minute interviews per one. The people that we've had on a radio show, it's a who's who of everybody. And honestly, I forget. There's almost nobody that we've gone after that we haven't gotten. You know, Paul McCartney, we've always used, let's get Paul McCartney. We've not got Paul McCartney. But above and beyond that, I don't know. I don't really have a hit list out there. I know that sounds terrible for somebody in the media, but we have interviewed so many sports stars and celebrities that it's, you know, we could do, and I often talk to our team, I prove me wrong. We did the last interview ever with Jack LaLanne, you know, who who was the first guy to create a health club back in the 30s, the first guy to recommend it. When he said athletes should lift weights, people said, you're crazy. Athletes can't lift weights. They'll have no more flexibility. They won't be able to move around. And then he said that women should lift weights. And they said, no, it'll kill women. And then he said older people should lift weights. It was a great interview. We interviewed maybe Andy Williams, who sang Moon River on the radio for us. And I often say we could put together a whole series of last interviews ever with. But who would I like to interview today? I can't, anybody that I want to interview, I tell our team, let's get them. And almost without exception, we get them.
Is there anything that we have not talked about that you think is important for our listeners to know when it comes to aging better, better and longer, or just in general, this whole theory of aging is cool, everybody's doing it? What comes to mind for you that you think is important to share with our listeners?
I mean, I love the spin you're putting on it, because it absolutely is true. But the truth of the matter is, it's kind of like a Dickens novel. It's the best of times and it's the worst of times. I mean, there's an onslaught, and you know this better than anybody in your business, there's an onslaught of frail elderly, coming out as like a freight train. And it's the best of times and the worst of times when it comes to aging. It absolutely has the potential to be cool, which is why we try to share stories of ordinary people who are making it cool. But I mentioned we've done more interviews with active centenarians, and there are some common threads. And one of them is the ability to adapt and to accommodate to loss. If you live long enough, you're going to lose just about everything, to be honest with you. If you live to 100, you've probably lost your spouse, you've probably lost your kids, you've lost most of your friends, you lost your keys, you lost your ability to drive, you lost your ability to live alone, it's loss, loss, loss. The sum total of all of that loss is just too much for some people to bear. They can't handle it. People that are over 100, people in their 90s, that are still digging life and still having fun, have the ability to mourn and move on. They have the ability to adapt and accommodate. They have the ability to still extract joy out of the things that brought them joy, but maybe in a different way. One of the examples I use, is Grandma Moses. Grandma Moses was a woman that lived on a farm. That's all she did. She liked to do needlework. She did fine needlework, but her hands got to be so arthritic she couldn't do it. This is a woman that's all she lived for. She lived to do her needlework, and when she couldn't do it anymore, she realized she could paint. So she could hold a paintbrush, so she started slapping paint around on canvas, and her painting sold for $1 million after she died. I tell a story about a guy by the name of Gordy Shields, who was a tennis player. He was a ranked tennis player, but he had a congenital condition with his back. His spine just got worse and worse and worse, like many old people. And pretty soon it was so bad he couldn't walk without a cane, or he would fall down. He would do a face plant. And he could no longer play tennis. And he's walking down the street one day, hunched over, barely able to look up, and just blowing by him are a bunch of guys on a bicycle, a peloton of, 18, 20 guys on bikes. And he looks at the position that they're in, hunched over on their backs, and he says, they're in the same position I am. Gordy goes and buys himself a bike, and within 3 years, he broke every world record that there was in bike and cycle racing for old guys. He adapted and he accommodated. So, whatever it is, don't give it up. Find a way to still extract the joy out of it. That's, one of the most common denominators about older people. As we age, one of my favorite quotes is, comes from Bill Thomas. Bill Thomas, geriatrician, very interesting guy. And, we interviewed Bill, and, Bill said, people think aging is a problem. Aging is not a problem. Aging is a process that allows you to get rid of that which matters least so that you can focus on that which matters most. So quit bemoaning the fact that you can't hit a fastball like you did in high school, and understand as you age that many of the gifts that we have can get more powerful. Empathy, compassion, perseverance, thoughtfulness, creativity, curiosity. You know, these things have nothing to do with age. You know, we just have to start looking at developing the natural talents that we have that never go away. And if you can do that, then life still can be fun and interesting.
Absolutely. Well, thanks for all you're doing to promote and celebrate aging. We certainly appreciate, Mark Middleton, you taking time out of your busy schedule to be with us today and share your wisdom with our and inspiration with our listeners.
Well, you know what? I'm honored that you asked me, Justin, to be honest with you, because I've looked into what you guys are doing here. And I have to say I'm just so blown away by it, because I know I have a lot of friends in the senior service industries, and taking care of the everyday needs of older adults is an incredible job. It's a job that I'm not sure how you do it, and yet you guys are still out here not only understanding but trying to help people understand that their mindset about aging is one of the most important things that we can do. What the mind believes, the body embraces. And if we can change the way we think about aging, we can change the way we age. And I've been saying for years to anybody in the senior service industry, and a lot of them just roll their eyes, you do not, that if as busy as you are, as huge as the burden is, you have to find a way to inspire younger adults to change the mindset of people in their 40s and 50s about aging. Because if you can do that, then you're going to slow this onslaught of frail elderly that you're trying to deal with every day. So thank you for all you do.
Thank you, Mark. And thank you, listeners, for joining us today. Until we meet again, keep living better and longer.